From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And we do that by building the Backyard Advantage, the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. And it's based around a culture of love, but it's soon going to be driven by artificial intelligence in many ways. And today on the show, I have my partners in the Growth Factory, Rick Spencer, who has been on the show before, and our newest partner, Ali Makani. And these guys, well, I'm going to have them give a little bit of their background, but I'm going to set up the show. I think today's show is going to be interesting because these two gentlemen are brilliant. They both come from a tech background, but they're also right at the heart of venture capital as well as we build out the Growth Factory. So it's an interesting concept to think about the overarching economy, where we are at as a country, and all the different things that we are facing. And then where does technology and artificial intelligence and, you know, the amount of productivity that technology brings, and it's the intersection for where venture capital fits in driving a lot of these solutions. So we're going to talk about those three subjects today. But before we get into it too deep, maybe I'll have Rick, why don't you introduce yourself, and then we'll go to Ali and give you a little of your backgrounds, and then I'll sort of try to lead this conversation.
Great. Well, it's been a while since I've been on the pod. Excited to be back. As you know, we've been building the backyard and approaching nearly 70 companies in the portfolio, seeing exits, seeing great progress. And now we're, you know, thinking about our next fund, Fund Two, right? We launched our first fund 3.5 years ago. We launched the Growth Factory. We created it from scratch. And it really was about how to build that community, how to bring capital together in this region. And, you know, as you mentioned, now this intersection of timing with technology, as well as the culture and the community that we've built, really exciting. And so, you know, as the managing partner of the fund, I get to work with these amazing founders day in and day out. And from the beginning, we always said, look, we can't predict the future. The founders predict the future, and we have to bet on those founders. And that is proving true, not only prior to this AI boom, but in this AI boom, we're betting on the right founders. They're building the future. And to be part of that future is incredibly exciting. And to bring on new partners that can help us see the vision of not only how do we choose those partners, but how do we think as a firm, how do we change ourselves for the future? I'm thrilled and I'm pumped and I'm ready to do it.
Super excited about it. So Ali, why don't we have you do your background a little bit, and then we'll sort of incorporate the three of us into this conversation.
Well, thank you for having me. It's awesome to be here. I think this is my first actual podcast.
Oh, so, let's break you in.
Yeah, we'll there break you go. In gently. I try to not to make too many mistakes or too many predictions that may not be true down the line. So, but it's great to be here. I think it's an exciting time in regards to entrepreneurs building and venture investing. I've been on the other side for a long time as an entrepreneur. You know, I have now 6 startups that I've been involved in, fortunate enough to go through that experience of up and down of building a company, growing it, learning, failing. But as I reflect back on the companies that I've built in the past and think about how AI could have really changed the trajectory of those companies, or how we could have solved problems that we could only do now because of the solutions that are available. It's not only is a great reflection to go back and think about it, but then you think about, what if we could do that? How do we do that? Why would we do it? And I think it's an exciting time to look at how do we invest? How do we be smarter in the investment process? But then once we do invest, how do we ensure that we're seeing around the corner? How do we see the white space that allows us to help our founders, our builders, to build And you know what? The art of investment comes with art of pivot. How fast can they pivot to get closer to what eventually be the product that they find the market for it? So it's exciting times, and I'm proud to be part of this team and excited about what we're going to build moving forward as far as Fund 2 goes. So thank you for having me.
Well, welcome. And I'm going to set up the conversation with my overarching thesis about entrepreneurs being the heroes of the American economy. They solve the world's biggest problems, they create opportunity, and they figure out a way to change the world. And they take a lot of risk. And so I really have entrepreneurs up there on a pedestal as somebody that I look up to, and I'm really inspired to be around entrepreneurs. But a lot of that is because of really what they're doing for the world and our country specifically. And, you know, I watch a lot of these TV shows around the economy, CNBC, and there's a lot of noise out there. And there's so many moving parts to what's happening in our economy now that it's easy to be frightened, right? You have talk about tariffs. You've got inflation and interest rates going up. You've got wars, geopolitical unrest. People are worried about the strength of the consumer. And now there's this big, beautiful bill that may or may not pass. And, you know, are the Trump tax cuts going to stay in place? But and many, many more moving parts to what might trigger different things that are happening in the economy. But I think the overarching issue that the U.S. faces is this debt that we're in. We have $36 trillion in debt and growing, $36 trillion plus, and we're adding a couple trillion to that every year in deficit spending. And it doesn't look like we're going to get that under control with this new bill. And so what are we going to do? We're going to continue to print some money and see interest rates tick up is what a lot of people predict. Nobody knows the future for sure. But when I say that entrepreneurs are the heroes of the American economy, one of the things that they do is they build better mousetraps and they drive efficiency. So as we think about, you know, how we're going to, raise more money with the federal government through taxes, if we're going to keep taxes low, it means we've got to have more profits at the corporate level. And, you know, overall, we have to drive more profits so that we pay a little bit more in tax and we can make up and maybe get this spending issues under control and basically grow our way out of this situation that we've got ourselves into. So with that said, I want to maybe set that up to get you guys' perspective on that issue. Am I overstating the possibilities of what entrepreneurship is going to be able to do for our country?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to set this up for Ali a little bit because he's been thinking deeply about this idea of venture science. And you're exactly right with, you know, historically entrepreneurs being the heroes of the American economy, and they will be in the future as well. I think when you talk about like a better mousetrap, some of that derivative thinking, I think where we're at now, and it is easy to get distracted with all the noise of things that are, you know, incrementally changing the economy and, you know, not having the impact that, you know, AI and technology has the potential to have. And so when I think about it, I think of like this moment in time, we're building a new future. It's not derivative thinking, right? And these entrepreneurs have to be trained and have the tools to build that new future, which is not just capital, right? It can't just be the same as before. And I think about this personally a lot too, because I think about my daughter's 14 and she just turned 14 and I say, I don't know if you're ever going to have a driver's license. I don't know if you'll have to have one, right? Like when that conversation hasn't happened before, right? Like, I don't know.
And your daughter's 14?
Yeah, she just turned 14.
I mean, yeah, in 4 years, you know, how many years before she's got a self-driving car?
So in 2 years, maybe we say, why do you need a driver's license? Don't worry about it. I don't know, right?
Right.
But this is, we've never had that conversation, right? When I talk about where are we going to live in 10 years, and I think about climate, I think about all the different solutions that we'll need and the things that we think about. I think about her learning experience. Will you have teachers or will you have your own teacher that is AI that learns you and teaches you, right? We have not had these conversations before. And, you know, I share that just because it's easy to tell those personal stories. And then I think about the founders who we're investing into, who we want to invest into, the things that we want to build. And we're not just building more companies, we're building the future. And I think that requires more of a, you know, system, you know, science methodology that still takes that grit and that passion, that courage, but is not just capital and let's get lucky, right? There is this mashup of building that future to me that are these foundation of tools, this foundation of community, and this timing that creates that future. And so maybe Ali, you want to share a little bit about how we've been thinking about that and how that helps today. And then maybe in 5 years, what does that look like for entrepreneurs?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting listening to the way you explain your daughter's potential for the future, right? And that's, you know, you think back, or, you know, when we were 14, like, if imagine, you know, I was my first year in the United States. So like imagine when you were 14 and what you were doing, right?
I was driving, by the way.
Yeah, you were driving, yeah.
No, yeah. Illegally.
That's right. So, and imagine the progress that we lived over the last, you know, 35, 40 years, right? And how the last 5 years have accelerated the change, the multiplier in change has been amazing. And I could only imagine what the next 5 years is going to look like. You know, you talk about not needing a driver's license. You know, I'm going, well, she's going to fly to go to her first day at college in a personal flying vehicle. That's a reality in 5 years. When she's ready to college, she has that option, right? So when we think about venture and how do we empower these heroes, as you mentioned, as entrepreneurs, they need better tools. We need better tools, which means that we have to be more deliberate on how we source. And then beyond sourcing, how do we actually validate? And how do we create opportunities for these entrepreneurs to be able to move faster than the change in technology? Because the multiplier is really hard right now to keep up. So if we decide to invest in something and we predict that in 12 months is going to do this, we're wrong because the change is faster than what we can predict. And in order for us to meet the demand and the change in the industry and support our entrepreneurs, we believe, you know, that we have to take a different approach. So what is the approach? The first approach is we really have to be scientific about what we built and why we built it. And we should be testing it differently. We should validate it differently. And we should be ready to pivot much faster. And our entrepreneurs need to have that type of a system around them as builders to be able to test, remove the bias, and only move forward when you actually have indicators, the signals that are true signals, not gut feel, right? So I've been on both sides of this now. And as an entrepreneur, we kind of get into this mode of, if I just have 3 more months, or if I have 1 more million, right? But I think on the investor side, we're more on: do I like this founder? Do we think the team is good? You know, I think those are all great, and it has worked for the last 30, 40 years. I think things need to change, and that's where the venture science as a playbook should become a way for us to at least do a better job of identifying what the problem is, how are we going to solve it, and how we're going to truly measure it. So that's kind of the framework of the venture science that I think will allow us to do a much better job, much faster job, And hopefully because of that, we are returning a much higher return to our investors, right? So that's kind of how I think about the venture science will play in a role in what we're going to do in the future.
So of course, venture capital, like every industry, is going to be utilizing AI and using technology to get better and do it better. So let's dive into that in a second. But what industries are going to be, I'd say, the first adopters? You talked a little bit about education, transportation. Where else are we seeing AI adopted more early? Because I know we're investing into these companies at the startup level. And I can tell you that I haven't even Googled anything in months. It's been, you know, I'm using the ChatGPT or something else. So which industries are getting disrupted and where do we want to, I guess, be focused?
Yeah, I think disruption is the key word, right? So I think every industry needs to have an AI strategy. You know, if they don't, they're going to get beat by their competition, right? So it's not optional anymore. It's necessary. The ones that can truly be disrupted, we still don't know that yet. But, you know, that some of the early things we see when it comes to life sciences and, you know, new medicine for the future, right? Like we have a company called Symphony in our portfolio that's looking to take all of this virus data and predict future vaccines, right? So you think about that. That's been reactive. You know, vaccines, the flu vaccine, for example, they wait, they see what the predominant strand is, they develop that. And why do you get one every year? Is because it changes, right? It modifies, it mutates. And so what if you could have a vaccine developing for where you see that the virus is going? So you have the vaccine ready for 2 years out. Mm-hmm. And as soon as that mutation happens, it's ready. It's in inventory. There's a distribution plan, all those things. I mean, that fundamental change, you know, would be massive for the economy, mm-hmm. for the health, for the prosperity of the U.S. And I think similarly with even just healthcare in general, right? Like, will you have a doctor in the future, right? Will you go to a doctor's office or will you have your own personal assistant in your pocket and you ask them questions, the tests come to your house, you never go to a doctor's office again, right? Like, never before have we thought that is possible, right? And so some of that is technology, some of that is the disruption of the standard way that businesses work. Healthcare is a great example of, we have so much infrastructure around medical billing and insurance and all these things. And so that is, you know, one of the things I think about, which is which of these industries will drag down the innovation because of the infrastructure and the thinking that they have and the mental model that requires a change.
Okay.
And that same with, you can look at military, right? Like, so many. So I don't know what you think, Ollie, but I always think about, like, where are these industry, you know, there's both, I think, a maturity curve, but also who's going to disrupt, right? Like, you look at Elon Musk, right? And how many things, you know, whether you like him or you're not, you don't, right? Like, the disruption he has introduced, SpaceX is a great example, right? A historically slow, bureaucratic aerospace industry that was mainly government driven. And now the government is relying on his spaceships to manage the International Space Station, right? If you would have asked someone at NASA 30 years ago, do you think a private company can come in and build a spaceship in a way that's reliable and that we would use to operate our in-house space? Everyone would have said no. No way. Never going to happen, right? So, you know, that's a big part of it, is that you either have a disruptor that, you know, has the ability to change an industry, or you have industries that are maturing and are more ready for change.
Okay. Wally, you want to comment?
I would say that, I mean, we don't know how AI is going to change. I think there's a lot of opinions and we see it. We have now, in just less than 18 months, for most people, their vocabulary has changed. How we conduct our family business around AI has changed, you know, how AI has changed how we, you know, manage our, you know, family dealings. So I think we're in a kind of a time capsule that it's going to be interesting to look back. And, you know, for me, the sad part about this is, well, the great part is I'm living in it, right? The sad part is that will I be here 50 years from now to reflect back to go, we were in that time, right? So I think that we are in a crossroad of technology impacting humanity like no other technology change in the history of humanity, right? So I believe that we will see significant changes when we're thinking about productivity. I believe AI will change how we experience things. You mentioned it. I haven't Googled in, you know, but I'm like, AI is going to make you do things that you're like, oh my God, what do you mean I don't have to do that anymore, right? So I think it's really going to change how we operate. So I can't tell you this is the industry or this is how it's going to really change, because it's going to change everything. You know, I imagine how we watch TV in a few years is going to be changed. We're not going to be bound to a screen anymore, because AI is going to enable us to have, you know, experiences in ways that we could only imagine, or we thought in movies, you know, that those will never be a reality in our time frame. So we're going to see a lot of change, and we just have to be open to it and experiment and experience it.
I feel like we're seeing like centuries of, or we're about to see centuries of technological improvement in decades, right? It's just happening so fast. Just an incredible, I'm excited to be alive right now, and excited to be, I guess, at the heartbeat of where a lot of this stuff is happening, be around these startups and around the technology. As a non-tech guy, it's really interesting to be up close and personal with a lot of these companies. But one of the things that we're seeing in real time with a lot of companies is people are using AI to augment their workforce. I haven't seen it really replacing a lot of jobs yet, or eliminating a lot of jobs, even though there's a lot of people that fear that that's coming. But how would you envision companies becoming more productive because they have AI agents, or AI agents managing AI agents, and swarms of agents really driving things that really maybe changing the way we do a call center, or changed. I heard Amazon is spending $200 billion on AI for their logistics and factories. So it's like, wow, the investment is coming at the big company level, and a lot of these small companies are at the heart of the innovation.
Yeah, we have a company in our portfolio called Huloop, and so they deploy AI agents to do mundane, repeatable tasks. And this is, you know, one of the core things that their customers reveal. So like, they're having a lot of progress with banks, and, you know, banks are notorious for not being innovative, right? There's a lot of just moving around paper and moving around data, not actually driving value. And so you think of a bank that wants to have better relationships with their clients. They want to know their clients more. They want to have use data and have better intelligence. So now you can take that person who, that 50% of their job is just emailing PDFs and tracking PDFs, right? Like, that exists. Mm-hmm. And if you can change that to an AI agent, and that person, now you can say, call the customer and figure out their pain points. Go research this and use that data to inform our customers so they can build better businesses, right? So that's a very simple example of a bank that can improve their deposits, the same personnel, but their business changes. They improve their deposits. They have longer relationships with their customers, right? I mean, meaningful change applying AI. And I think those are the examples where it's everyone, most people worry about, oh, if that task is eliminated, that person is eliminated, and not about what does that person learn to do next, right? We stop and say, this is going away. We don't say, and what do they do next? And that's where we have to be thinking, not only as companies responding to AI, but as entrepreneurs.
That's right.
What do we do next? Mm-hmm. What do we do next? And so that's why I think we have to, even with entrepreneurs, get them to think differently, because traditionally entrepreneurs have been saying, oh, I found a problem, let me build a solution. But is that solution, you know, AI is moving so quickly, we don't know if that solution is going to be viable in 3 months, 6 months, 9 months.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's a really, I think, important mindset, not only for companies, but for entrepreneurs.
Yeah, I would say venture has to change how it thinks as well, right? If we're seeing founders and startups accelerate how they built, and we demand them to go faster because AI, right? If we think about the narrative of how AI has played in a venture role, we're putting these pressure on our founders that says, oh, two founders and AI should build a billion-dollar company in 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the kind of a North Star that we're setting up for what the future AI and startups going to be, how is venture thinking about keeping up with that, right? How is venture looking at AI to say, how am I going to run my business? Not investment. Yeah, we have to invest in, but how do we run our business, the business of venture, the principal operating system of venture that AI allows us to accelerate? You know, when founders now building product using, you know, these vibe coding systems and AI driven solution, how are we going to do the diligence on that? How is venture going to come up with solutions to start thinking about AI built solution and validation of that? So it's a shift in our industry as venture capitalists to say, how does AI not only should, but how can it change the trajectory of our success by having it at the fabric level of our operation, right? And that's how I think about AI will impacting us, enabling our entrepreneurs moving forward.
Interesting. So as I think about us, you know, we're building the Backyard Advantage, right? The most connected community in the world, centered around this culture of love. I talk about it all the time, but a lot of that is engineering wins. So we make helpful connections, meaningful connections to drive positive outcomes. We help people get to third base a lot. You, Rick, both of you do a tremendous job of bringing people together to solve problems and through introductions. So now my question of us is, how do we use AI and technology to be a force multiplier for this tribe that we've built?
Yeah, I think it goes back to some of the things I was saying about preparing the entrepreneurs, right? And so one of the things that we do well with this engineering of wins is, you know, it's not just, oh, let me email this person and connect them. It's no, having a conversation with a founder saying, let me educate you on who this person is. Let me give you the questions that you need to ask. Let's talk about your objectives, right? And so there's a lot, the way that we do it, there's a lot more that goes into just, you know, giving someone a business card, right? And AI will only help us do that more, where we can say, look, you know, these are the prompts. You need to go use our engine. You need to create the report that you're going to use for that meeting. You're going to need to set up your objectives, right? I mean, this is like where it changes everything, is that it's not cold calling where you're like, hey, let me just keep dialing and hopefully I get lucky, right? And yeah, I have a script, but a lot of this is, did I catch this person in the right mood? You know, all those things. It's like, no, the level of planning and preparedness that you can have. I mean, think of like an athlete, right? I mean, now the athletics has changed so much with the data that you have and how athletes prepare. Entrepreneurs have to prepare the same way. And so as we think about our future and what we're building, it's like, how do we educate the entrepreneurs, prepare the entrepreneurs, and give the entrepreneurs the best chance of succeeding? And when we talk about de-risking in venture, yeah, how do we reduce that risk where it's like, oh, don't just call on, you know, SMUD. You know, you need to be prepared for that meeting, and this is how you prepare.
Yeah.
And not only for the first meeting, but every, you know, subsequent meeting and getting the contract right and, you know, using the right way to deploy, right? Like the whole plan.
Yeah, I think about you, the word data has come up a couple of times already in this conversation. I think you talked about it with the vaccine company. You talked about it with, you know, just now. And I think about these pockets of data that are, I guess, proprietary in nature. And then there's obviously the data that's out there that's available to everybody. But identifying those pockets of data that we have unique access to, or somebody has unique access to, and how to bring that together for a solution.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you're hitting the nail right on the head, is that it's about that data, that information, right? So when we think about how are we going to leverage AI as part of our operation, we think about it, you know, we call it Venture OS, and it's about how we systematically understand every interaction. To me, every interaction is a data. And how do we capture that? How do we analyze it? How do we create the patterns out of it? And how do we make it part of our decision-making? I think when you think about venture, and as you put it, Rick, you know, how are we gonna prepare our founders to take advantage of every opportunity? And it's not just a business card, but it is a plan. We have to have a system that allows to do that. We're not talking about AI as a tool. We're not talking about uploading a deck in ChatGTP and tell me and say, what should I do with this, right? We're talking about that the fabric of understanding data from not only the ingestion part of it, but the extraction, to be able to have the truth of the matter that you is in front of you, that you need to make a decision, right? I think in a traditional way of venture, we rely on CRMs and Excel spreadsheets and the, you know, the general partner's memory and their past success, right? I think as we're accelerating, we need to augment all that with data, which is facts, truth, predictions, modeling, and be able to understand the opportunities much faster and at a much greater depth and levels. And that's where our philosophy around how do we run our business on AI, and how do we have an OS that helps us to ensure that not only we understand the opportunities that's in front of us and the growth trajectory that it could have, but all the other things that we decided to pass on, where are they now? Why did we pass on them? How do we learn from that? So next time we're trying to invest, we had good enough loopback feed from our activities, our investments, our founders, their pivots, their opportunities to learn faster and better in how we do our job next time that there is a deck in front of us that we have to evaluate.
Yeah, and I think that just kind of continuing on the data theme, two things is moving, you know, we need awareness and education, which the data can help with, but then there's the preparation, right? So imagine, you know, one of our portfolio companies is preparing for a big pitch to Google, and they've got their plan and their ideas, and we said, hey, we've created a simulation for you. Now you don't, just like the athlete thing, you don't just show up to the game and you don't have any reps, right? We've created a scenario, and they're actually going to practice three scenarios. And so now they go into that meeting with Google and they're prepared. They're not just educated and aware, but they've actually pitched the AI model three different ways based on three scenarios, and they've learned from that. And so now going into that meeting, they're ready, right? Mm-hmm. More ready than they would be. And so moving from awareness, education to preparedness. And then to Ali's point, the other thing specifically with data and venture is all this IP, right? The venture is very much a, you know, invest or pass. And when you pass, you know, it just kind of goes away, right? We're not tracking those things. We're not thinking about those things, right? But what if we said, you know, oh, hey, we're looking at this company and, or we invested in this company and they need to go to the next level. Didn't we hear, like, we try to do that as humans now and like connect the dots. And like, didn't we hear about a company like this? Could we do this? Could we do mm-hmm. that? But what if we, you know, it gave us the game plan mm-hmm. and said, hey, you know, this is your portfolio company. They need to get here. You 3 years ago saw this company and you also saw this founder. And if you got that founder and that IP and you applied it to this company, here's your projected return, right? now we're talking a whole different level.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'll just add that I think it should, if it's not already a demand, it will be a demand of our LPs. That how are we thinking about, you know, quicker return, higher returns, right? I mean, there's no mystery in that the last 10 years has been, you know, a kind of a challenging venture time in regards to exits and returns. And that demand will be upon the VC industry to go, how can we, you know, move faster and how do we return better to our LPs? And I think the understanding of all the touch points, which to me, that's every piece of data, every piece of information that comes across our desk, has to be understood, has to be evaluated, has to have the relationships built that we could reference it on quickly. And this is not about replacing, you know, a general partner or an associate. No, it's actually about the productivity and ability to make better decisions faster, right? Today, you're probably dealing with 30 to 60 days of, you know, venture evaluating and deciding if they're going to invest in a particular startup. I find that to be a little bit ridiculous in the day and age that we live in, right? So how do we bring that in? How do you turn that into a, I'm not suggesting instant, but how do you make that so you are moving forward faster, because our world is moving faster? And that's how I believe understanding of data and managing data and running it as a as an operating system that helps us run our company from a principles level will allow us to become a leader inside of the venture ecosystem.
I think about the relationships that we've built with, obviously, our investors. We've got 100 plus investors, but we have all these other partners and many within the venture capital industry who all have portfolio companies. So the relationships that we've built so far, and we're just getting started, they extend beyond the ones that are in the top of our mind. They extend to a venture capital firm's portfolio companies and so on. So the relationships go deep. And I try to imagine how to utilize that data in order to engineer wins better, make better decisions, and really build better companies. So it's really interesting. And I also think about the companies that we invest into. Many times we see a technical visionary and maybe a technical co-founder or somebody who's more of a product market person and a technical person and maybe a financial person as kind of the founding team. It makes me wonder, and I think about the example that comes to mind is Apple, right? It started with Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak. One is a technical visionary, one is the technical co-founder, right? And so will companies be built in our near future that don't need Steve Wozniak? They just need Steve Jobs. And I am a fan of Steve Wozniak, by the way.
Yeah. So. I mean, I think there is a place for a very technical founder to leverage tools and technology, AI-driven, to be able to build a company that achieves the highest, you know, level of success. I think that's the same as us saying there will be a unicorn inside of 100 companies that we invest in, but there will be others who's going to, you know, do things a little bit different, right? So yes, there will be that. I think that the writing is on the wall that the AI is going to enable a single founder who is very technical. I think it's actually going to be a lot more of non-technical founders liberated to be able to do things that they never thought they can. And I think that's, to me, is the exciting part, right? You know, I geek out with Farzad, our CTO, you know, working on different things, but we're techie guys. But then I see couple of people that are part of my group that are not technical are becoming technicals. I have designers that are now saying, oh, I build my own product. Where before they just designed and they needed an engineering team to help them. I think AI is going to actually empower non-technical people to do a lot of technical innovation. And that's the exciting part about how this could become an interesting path forward.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. And I look at it a little bit differently of like, you know, we know the Apple story because it's a huge success, right? But for every Apple, there's 1,000 Steve Wozniaks that just haven't met their Steve Jobs, right? And they've got a brilliant idea and they could do something incredibly disruptive, but they don't have that person that can tell the story, set the vision, close the deal. And so when I think about AI and I think about the 1,000 Steve Wozniaks that we don't know because they never met Steve Jobs, I think that's where AI can now help those people get to the next level. And there's the acceleration of innovation that can happen with that now, because you don't hear about those people because they're in their garage tinkering and geeking out with their engineer friends.
Yeah.
And they don't have the skill set, the drive, the vision to take their innovation and break it through.
Okay, so can you elaborate on that a little bit? So you're seeing the Steve Wozniak of the world. Not that they're everywhere, but there's a lot of technical people in there that are out there that are brilliant and have great ideas. Are you saying they're going to be able to build the companies without the technical visionary, or they're going to use AI to find the visionary that can
both
sell?
I think they'll be able to get more progress than they would using AI, because they can put it and say, like, I need help telling the story, right? Like, I can explain the technical roadmap. I can explain the architecture. I can geek out all day long. I don't know how to tell a story. Uh-huh. Not only do I not know how to tell a story, I'm scared of telling stories, right? Yeah. And so now they can get AI to help them tell the story. They could practice with AI, right? Mm-hmm. And so now they have more chance of sharing their technology innovation with the world. Could they also find someone? Yes, they could say, look, you know, I want my AI model to interview 10 people, right? And now I'm not out there kind of randomly dating folks. I'm focused on the things that are going to fit, the things that I need. So all of that can help. And all of those are, again, we don't have the data to know how many Steve Wozniaks had ideas better than Apple, but they never had Steve Jobs. Mm. And so that potential, it gets me really excited, because you know that acceleration of innovation can happen with these use cases.
So we're hyping this up pretty big on this show, because it's our it's not our job to hype it up, but it's we get hyped up about it because we're right in the middle of, you know, I know we're at the beginning of the first inning and it's exciting. You think it's overhyped right now? You think AI and technology, are people overhyping it, or where is it overhyped, and who's missing the boat?
Honestly, I don't think it's overhyped. I think the part that is overhyped, and I may be wrong, is what AI is going to do as far as taking away jobs. I think that is a little overhyped. I think, in my opinion, AI has all the possibilities that everyone is outlining, from how it's going to change our lives, how it's going to improve, you know, our ability to experience and reach the goals that we want to have, and even solve problems that we never thought could be solvable, cure cancer that we never thought it could be cured, right? But I think the overhyped part to me is how many people are fixated on it's going to take out our jobs. I think we look at how technology has changed humanity and our requirement to scale up over the last 100 years. It just moves us to a different level of set of skills that we need to have. And I believe AI will allow every skilled worker to be able to accelerate, achieve, and live a better life because AI helped them to be more productive. That, I wish more people talked about that and hyped that opportunity up, because that's how I see it. You know, I feel like I'm a pretty capable person when it comes to doing the things that, you know, that I do on a daily basis. I think that I'm a better person because AI is there to help me. It's not replacing me, it's helping me. I'm able to do more. I'm able to be more educated. I be more informed. And I believe that is going to be the kind of the factor that's going to increase productivity. And it's more underhyped than I wish it was over, you know, that more people hyped that opportunity versus AI being hyped itself.
Yeah, I would say two things. I would agree with the fear, you know, that so people are consumed with the fear and not seeing, look, I have 99.9% confidence that AI is going to drive innovation we've never seen before. Now, we don't know exactly how. We can't predict the future, but we know that everything is in place to drive innovation that we have not seen before and to literally shape the future of our world. So I have ultimate confidence in that. And I think, again, we talk about, you know, typical kind of human mindset. We're fearful, fear, uncertainties, and doubts. So we let that consume us versus saying, what's next? What does the future look like? Let's dream a little bit, right? And so I think that's a humanity mind shift that's going to need to take place to truly unlock the innovation opportunity. I think on the venture side, we have to change our mindset too, because for so long, venture has been about, you know, you set a thesis, you have a prediction, and you're kind of married to that. I don't think the future of venture is who has the best prediction skills. Mm-hmm. I think the future of venture is who's the most agile. And that is a big shift, right? Where you say, you know, I can't arbitrarily say we're going to invest in these kind of companies with these kind of check sizes and these kind of stages. You know, I think you're going to have to use this data to say, look, in this month, based on our pipeline and the markets and all of these data points, this month, this is the best investment we can make. Mm-hmm. Next month may be different. And if we can't move that quickly, we don't have the data to move that quickly, we don't have the mindset to move that quickly, we don't have the systems to move that quickly, that's where I think there will be a new class of leaders in venture, and the rest will either have to learn and adapt or will become obsolete.
All right, I'm going to bring this back as we wrap up. A couple more questions or a couple more, I guess, topics, if you will. I'm going to bring it back to where I started. You know, I'm a really, we all are really patriotic people. We love our country, and it's talked about a lot that there's this AI arms race out there, and in the U.S., is doing really well in some areas and probably the leader at some of this cutting edge stuff, but there's competition. It's happening all over the world. And so I think about like this race that is out there, seems to be out there from a national security standpoint, from a economic security standpoint, which is national security. And what are we doing to position our youth to help drive this over the long haul so that, you know, there's going to, you talked about your 14-year-old daughter, it's going to be her age and even younger that really drive a lot of these shifts over the coming, you know, 5-10 years.
Yeah, this is becoming a topic in our community. We're testing this concept of something called Legacy Lab. So we're just in the initial stages of building something that empowers the youth to take control of their future, right? And yeah, I mean, from our investors to our community partners, so many people are concerned that, you know, how is education preparing them for the future? Is it preparing them for the future?
Right. Schools may be a little bit slower in adopting some of this stuff because mm-hmm. of the bureaucracy and a lot of reasons. But you got to, as a parent, you got to take matters into your own hands.
Right. And I think, you know, there's the intersection of education, government. What is government's influence? Many people in this country feel, oh, I need to wait till the government tells me what to do, and those people are smart and responsible, and so I'll let them lead me, right? Is that the right mindset to have for building the future we want? I mean, you know, you look at China and they're all rowing in the same direction because of their structure. And I'm not saying we moved to that structure, but they're rowing in the same direction and they're moving pretty quick, right? And so, you know, how do we empower the youth to push past, you know, oh, I got to wait for someone to tell me what to do. I have to wait for that. And that goes back to the entrepreneurial story, right? Of how do we teach them that entrepreneurial skills can save their future? And I think that's the big mindset for the youth is they're scared. They don't know why they should be hopeful in some cases. And they're just confused in many cases. And that we could talk about all the reasons why. But you know, you take that fear, confusion, and lack of hope, that's dangerous for our future. Yeah. And so, you know, this is something that excites me, not only because of the, you know, connection with my daughter and my niece and nephews and friends and family. But you started with like, where are we going? Where's this economy going? Where's the society going? I mean, this is like an existential question that we have to, you know, because we're going to be part of it, but we're not going to build the future.
That's right.
Right. We're just helping get it started. And, you know, the people who are going to build the future are your grandkids, your kids, my daughter, right? And so if we're not preparing them for that opportunity, what does that say about us?
Yeah. I love that. And, you know, I listened to this podcast called Acquired. I'm not sure if you guys have listened to it, but highly recommend it. They go back and, you know, replay and educate you on a journey of some of the most well-known companies, you know, over the last few hundred years, right? The one that, as you were, you know, sharing this opportunity of our kids and our next generation is what's going to build. One of the episodes that I was listening to is about Hermes, you know, the fashion company. They're now in their eighth generation of family ran business. When was the last time you heard that someone's kids are taking over their company's business? It's becoming less and less, right? So I believe that everything else needs to happen. Yeah, education needs to be better, faster, at a greater level, with more discipline. That takes time. And I think I go back to you started by talking about entrepreneurs are the heroes of this, you know, this country, and could really change the trajectory. I believe we as both entrepreneurs and investors, we should encourage our founders to involve their kids in their business. And we should encourage them to have them be part of the building of their companies. Because there's nothing better than actual hands-on experience. And, you know, watching an 80-year-old kid today and the language that they use, the vocabulary that they use, right? It's so different. And we need to close the gap. How do we bring our experiences closer to our kids, to our grandkids and the future? And having them be involved in our venture building is the way for us to move entrepreneurship. So the Legacy Lab, as you mentioned, I think it's a fantastic vision for how we could educate. But we should encourage more. We should encourage our founders to get their kids and families involved. We should actually incentivize them to say, do you have a teenager that is doing part of your job? Maybe we do a grant. Maybe we write a check for them to go get, you know, for college education. That's what we could do to really accelerate the passing of the entrepreneurship to the next generation of entrepreneurs.
Yeah, we need Haneyville to not only be a beacon of family, but a beacon of entrepreneurship.
Ooh, I love it. I love it. Okay, so I guess I'll just ask you, any closing thoughts or predictions, any bold predictions about the future, whether it be 3, 5, 10 years out. Any bold predictions or any closing thoughts?
Well, I'll maybe issue a challenge, and I think it's for us and the community that we're building, which is holding true to the values. So I think, you know, you talk a lot about values, Mark, of commitment, of character, you know, of, you know, the things that it takes to succeed in this life. I think it's easy to get so focused on technology and innovation and lose touch with those. And that is, you know, it's not a prediction. It's a concern of mine of that we lose touch with the values and that we go off the rails. And so I think we have to, as much as people get excited about this conversation and what we're building and how we're helping and the growth of, you know, companies and the financial success, we have to say it starts with the values. And if we lose sight of those values, what are we, even if we see the most amazing innovation in the world, what do we really accomplish? And so as our chief dreamer, as our chief evangelist, I would just challenge you to make sure that those values stay true to us and that we never stop talking about them.
Thank you.
I've learned not to make predictions anymore. But I think that how we experience things in life is going to completely change. I think AI is going to allow us as humans to experience not only technology, but experience life differently. We could get to places much quicker, physically or through technology. We could experience things faster than Amazon same day delivery. We take a lot of that stuff for granted. I just think that the next 5 years or so, the on-demand experience is going to be so different. And I'm fearful of it, but at the same time, I'm really excited about it, right? To be able to walk in into a fully immersive experience and be able to live it, touch it, feel it, I'm excited about that. And that's what I would say, that 5 years from now, we're gonna live in a fully immersive experiences powered by AI, and we will experience humans and things in ways that we've never had before.
Yeah. I love it. I'll reiterate my bold prediction, and I haven't really talked about this a lot. I've never talked about it other than with you guys, but this idea that, you know, we're going to print more money as Americans feels almost inevitable at this point. But I wear a shirt a lot of times that says everything is figure outable. And I believe that entrepreneurship and innovation, whether it be big companies, small companies, startups, they're going to figure out a way to drive enough productivity to outgrow the wasteful spending that we are doing as a society. And everything's going to be okay because entrepreneurs are on the way.
Couldn't agree with you more.
Amen.
And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at the Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.